It's January 23rd, 2014. This is The Hell Yeah Show. Hello, and welcome to The Hell Yeah Show. I'm Alan.
I'm Emery.
We are bringing you best practices for fine living, advice on how to not let technology ruin your day. Emery.
Rodeo sauce. Served on a mechanical bowl.
And we're back from a long winter's nap.
Sure.
It's been like a month.
Yeah, it's been, I think it's been more than a month.
Probably has.
That is the holidays.
Yeah. And we also had a bunch of stuff going on, and then plus this is the first episode where we're trying something new, so that awkward transition that you probably were just subjected to is all my fault. But yeah. we'll see how it goes.
All right. There may have been some splicing in afterwards that happened in this episode.
Yeah, but, well.
Yeah. Nope. You know.
I think it all works out.
Maybe no one will notice. Well, they certainly will now.
Yeah. Did you have a good holiday?
I had a great holiday. Yeah, it was very relaxing. It was very rejuvenating and, feeling good post-holiday. So.
Oh, man, I got to tell you something. I don't think I can do this.
What?
So, after the Thanksgiving show, which I think was the last one that we did, I was talking about that stuffing I love so bad.
Sure.
And one of our dozens of loyal listeners sent me a tweet on the Twitter machine and said, wasn't this the same stuffing that gave you food poisoning last year? And I think it might have been. Except that it was different circumstances. Like, I think it was like, over a week old when I had it last year, but I'm not sure. But part of me just refuses to acknowledge.
It, like, regardless of how good the stuffing is, week old stuffing is bad news.
It's so good though. But clearly it wasn't that bad because I did it again. I had the stuffing and I was very brave and it's my favorite. So I thought that was pretty good. But then, so we had the Thanksgiving, we had Hanukkah, we had Christmas stuff, we had driving around all over the place, back and forth, et cetera, et cetera. And then all sorts of things going on at work. And then I was out for like 2 weeks and then I was back for like half a week and then I went... I was away for a week on training, the same week of my birthday and a wedding anniversary. It was a very busy, busy, busy last few months
Which partially explains why there's been no Hell Yeah Show.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go. We should be back on a regular schedule now, though. So,
Yeah, that'd be good.
Look out.
So last week I was in Scenic, as I've been referring to it as, Scenic Schaumburg, Illinois, for a training thing. It was like a Cisco class because we had like a bunch of spare credits at the end of the year for like training stuff. And my boss was like, hey, you should go take a class. And I said, yeah, okay, sure, whatever.
Great.
And then it turns out that a couple days later, they were like, hey, you're going to a class. And so I was away for a long time and had lots of FaceTime calls with my daughter and my wife, and the technology usually worked except for in the evenings the hotel Wi-Fi was just terrible
because everyone was using it.
Well, yeah, it's porn time.
Yeah, right.
From like 5 p.m. until 2 a.m. Yeah. People are getting their whatever on
that or Netflix. Yeah.
Netflix is a very efficient networking technology. Their streaming software is the top of the line. There's absolutely nothing that could have been caused by that. The first night that I was there was like a Sunday night and everything was great. Like I hooked up my iPad to the TV while I was like unpacking stuff and like all that. And I had Plex running and I was like, watching The Mentalist.
Of course.
I was streaming The Mentalist from my house while I was unpacking and generally just having a good old time. And then every single night after that was just total fail. So that was a little distressing. But
it can't be worse than the entire summer I spent living in a hotel.
Well, yeah.
That was a bad internet situation.
I stayed at the Resident Evil Inn.
Yeah.
And it was all right.
Huh. All right.
I like it because they have like these big like suites and kitchens, which I really like because I don't like to go out.
Oh, so. Yeah, that's always nice.
So and there's also a Whole Foods, and I haven't been in like near a Whole Foods in forever. Like I've got my co-op now, and I like my co-op a lot, but I really miss having a Whole Foods. But so I got myself a birthday cake.
Yep.
And it was delicious. It was like a chocolate torte. It was pretty good. And drove out there in a because the way that since I was going away on official business, I got to drive an official vehicle, which in this case involved me contacting my motor pool and saying, I would like a vehicle, and I'm driving to, you know, Chicago, essentially. And they said, how many people? And I said, one. And they said, enjoy your Prius. So I got to drive a Prius, which I'd never done before. And it was all right.
Yeah,
I mean, it wasn't anything special. They're like, you know, at least the model that I was in, I'm sure that they make, like, you know, fancy Prii, but the Prii that I was driving was very minimalist, bare bones, mm-hmm. Very similar to, like, a, oh, I don't know, like a, what's the, like a Corolla-type trim line, where it's
sure.
pretty basic on the inside. But one thing I really like about it is the in-dash stereo thing. Because I was able to hook up like an iPod, my iPod Classic, and the armrest, mm-hmm. and I could control everything from the dash, and that was pretty cool.
Did it have the touchscreen, or was it just the?
It had a touchscreen.
Okay, yeah, because the they used to so Priuses or Prii.
That's a scientific term.
Yeah,
a herd of Priuses referred to as a Prii.
For the first many years, actually, all had touchscreens. That was kind of a signature of them.
Yeah.
And you know, and back in a time when like a large touchscreen in a car was kind of a big deal, and then at some point they rolled out cheaper models that didn't have those and just had everything in the sort of like in dash you know heads up type display, and I kind of felt like that was, you know, they were losing a signature aspect of what makes a Prius, because
well. The touchscreen is too far away though to reliably use if you're maybe if you're shorter.
Yeah, no, I mean you want to be using steering wheel controls if you're for most stuff. Yeah,
yeah.
But it's, you know, it was a cool thing.
Yeah, that was pretty nice. The like steering wheel controls are a little blah, but I mean those are hard to do right, I think, and no one really nails it.
Yeah,
because I felt like the. Some of the like mode selection stuff was a little awkward, mm-hmm. and I also it took me forever before I knew what some of like I hate the gear shift on it.
Yeah, the little, knob.
It really freaks me out.
Yeah,
and I also don't like that there's no key to turn.
Yeah, that's you get used to that.
I'm sure, but one thing I thought was really cool was that I was you know gone for like that week, and I didn't have to drive much during the week because my training stuff was like. Across the street basically from where I was staying, but the I didn't have to put gas in it until I had left town.
Yeah,
like I was on the way back home before I was like, oh, I should probably get some gas.
Yep.
And my fleet people were like, just get as much gas as like the bare minimum because it's cheaper for us than it is for you on the road. And that was the other thing
nice.
Too is that they gave me like a little fleet card, so when I got gas, it, you know, I just like swiped their card and put in a PIN number and told it what my mileage was, and it gassed me up.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And I kind of liked it. I wish that it was like a little more comfortable inside. But you know, it was you know, it could have been a lot worse. Part of me wanted to like have the motor pool people give me like a giant van or something, because there's that IKEA there. It's like the closest IKEA, and I was like, hell's yes, IKEA. But then I was like,
you can fit a lot in a Prius, man.
Are you sure?
Oh yeah, that back hatch. I mean, I don't know what model they vary in size depending on the model.
It was a four, you know, five door. It's like a four door with a hatch, and then it had like
you collapse the back seats and open that hatch, and there's
that didn't even occur to me.
Yeah.
So the previous person that had driven the Prius before me had screwed up like this tarp that comes across the top, and it took me like forever because I had like my suitcase in the trunk, and I'm sitting here and I'm like, why won't this thing pull? Because there's like this little tarp thing,
yep.
And I'm like I'm tugging on it, yeah. And I'm like,
Had it rotated 90 degrees or something?
Well, had it like turned around. So
yeah,
it's pulling up the wrong direction.
Yep.
And it took me like 10 minutes of like, you know, wrestling with this thing, trying to pull it out. Like I was a magician trying to take like a tablecloth off without disturbing the dishes.
Yep.
I was there like this, like jerking it back and forth, and nothing was happening.
I know exactly the part you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. But eventually I got it. And then I was like, oh, see, this is why I'm an engineer. Like, once I stuck my nose down there and realized that it was on upside down, I was like, oh, this is a piece of cake. I can totally fix this.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, yanked it out and turned it around. It was fine.
Uh-huh.
But, I everything seemed to be good. I missed having the satellite radio, though. But
oh, huh.
Other than that, it was pretty good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I liked it. It wasn't, I mean, I wouldn't buy one, but I didn't like it that much. Don't go crazy. But, yeah. You know, it wasn't as terrible as I was afraid it would be. But, oh, and I did get to take a FaceTime call on LTE.
Like, really?
Yeah.
So
like,
does that work?
Oh, yeah, it works great.
Cool.
It works a hell of a lot better than hotel Wi-Fi, I'll tell you that.
Well, I mean, for a while, they were not allowing, like, it was against policy, or like the phone would not let you do FaceTime calls over cellular network, right?
That was over 3G for AT&T. They said, you know, don't do that. But then ever since I had, because like the first day that I, or the first weekend that I had my iPhone 5, I made an LTE FaceTime call from Kinnick Stadium during a football game back to my I hesitate to refer to it as my daughter's iPhone, but it's a it's an iPhone 4 that's like in her room that like does her white noise and plays Shaun the Sheep when we're in the car. But I made a FaceTime call to that from the stadium so we could say hi. But
cool.
Yeah, I think they've always allowed it on the 5, but I don't know about that. But the one like technical difficulty that I had while I was out of town was I had recently set up a new instance of OS X server on Mavericks, and everything was great, and I'm doing my device manager thing, and I got all the devices added back in, and then something went wonky with like Kerberos, which is like the authentication service that talks to the directory server, which is called Open Directory, and like I had a hard time authenticating to my VPN, which was really bumming me out because I was using like, you know, the Open Hotel Wi-Fi, and I like to backhaul that stuff. Yep. And my work VPN is a split VPN because we don't do a full tunnel. So only the stuff that goes to my office network would go over that. And I was like, well, screw that. So I was all smug and proud of myself for like, you know, the first 2 days. And then something happened and I don't even know what it was. But it subsequently wasn't working right. So I got to rebuild that when I got home. And that's the one thing that I think could not suck any harder about OS X server is that it's, first of all, it is impossible, as far as I can tell. It's certainly not documented anywhere, and nobody knows how to do it. You cannot, like, re-Kerberize your directory server anymore. Like, you used to be able to when they used MIT Kerberos, but now that they're using this version of Kerberos as part of Heimdall, it's like an alternate implementation of Kerberos it's like a BSD friendly version, which is why they went that way instead of the MIT one. But there's apparently no way to do the re-Kerberize anymore. So I had to reinstall because I whacked my directory and then I recreated one and then it wouldn't let me recreate one and then it wouldn't let me delete it because the Kerberos thing wasn't working right and then it couldn't authenticate and it was just in a horrible state. So I had to like just nuke it from orbit because it's the only way to be sure, as they say. So that was
I'm surprised that OS X server still exists at all. So
it's like, well,
that it's still something that's supported on Mavericks.
It's there's a lot of things. Well, see, like their device management stuff is great. I think most people like in an enterprise environment use Casper or something else entirely. I wouldn't recommend OS X server for like a big network.
Yeah.
Like in terms, it's great for like small business and home. And I think it's actually really hard to beat the stuff that it can do. And I'm kind of trying to figure out how to write about this a little bit more because I think it's something that people should consider. Like the device management stuff alone is outstanding. Like when we were going to like my dad's, I mean, I can just set up the access to like his household Wi-Fi before we leave. And I just like add it to the profile that everybody's devices pull.
Wow.
And then we just roam onto it. Yeah. So there's a lot of really cool stuff you can do with it. And if you have multiple devices or, heaven help you, a household, it's kind of amazing. So
cool.
Especially when, you know, stuff's not working. Like, I can't do blah. And then you can, like, hit a button and make sure that they can do blah. And that's kind of cool.
Yeah. With the direction Apple is going as a company, I'm surprised they still have they are supporting a server product.
Well, they have to. They don't want to like completely concede management of mobile devices, and because you can also manage desktops and laptops with it.
Sure, yeah.
And like, you know, security stuff and like remote lock and wipe, and there's a lot of really cool stuff you can do, and there's no other way to do it. So
right, yeah.
But yeah, that was all my exciting stuff. It wasn't nearly as exciting as Neil Patrick Harris in Mexico. Those pictures are outstanding, and we've got a link in the show notes, but like that entire series of photos that he put on Instagram of him just getting plowed on margaritas is easily the best thing I've ever seen on come from Instagram.
Not just the, so I hadn't seen these until you just sent it to me before the show. Not just the photos, the captions and titles that accompany them are pretty great.
Oh,
too.
Yeah. Remarkable.
Yep.
And you can tell like his kid, like his husband and his kid are like completely just embarrassed in a couple of the photos where they're like, they're face palming like off to the side, like you've got to be kidding me. And yeah, it's pretty great. I had a, that guy.
So this was, when did these come out? This was like an over the holiday thing?
Yeah, it was like a couple weeks ago or 3 weeks ago.
All right.
And it was in the top of my things that I should talk about on the show when I was browsing my list because it was just too good. And then you and I were talking about the rich kids of Instagram, which is pretty good.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. So, yeah, I had another Instagram thing that I had not discovered until recently. There's a blog that, if you don't know about it, that reposts pictures from people who post on Instagram in ways that flaunt their wealth, like really tacky ways.
Well, sometimes
that's usually the point, is it's like someone's, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I think basically, like, you know, if T-Pain had a had an Instagram account and was like, you know, constantly just like yachting and, you know, bathing in Cristal, it's like that.
Yeah, exactly. One of them, I saw like someone had like a $30,000 bar tab.
They had one that was much bigger than that.
Really? Okay. Yeah. I mean, but this one, they'd written like their name across the top, you know, like they'd signed it and then he'd written their name across the top with like an exclamation point of like, it's like, yeah, I paid for this, you know, it's like, great.
Yeah, I think, there was one tab that I saw that, someone posted somewhere, and it was, I think it was like a hockey team or something, but it was from somewhere in Las Vegas. I still have a copy of it somewhere, but the I swear the bar tab was like $92,000.
It can happen.
I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, no, and actually, I mean, in this one you could see the breakdown, and it was like they ordered like 50 waters and each water was like $10 a piece.
Oh, yeah, because if you get, like, you know, like bottles of Voss at bottle service, like, you're pretty much, you're already on your way, so.
Yeah. Anyway.
Oy. Yep. But yeah, I think, let me see if I have that, but you had some stuff. I want to hear about this Zelda thing, because there was an article that came out not too long ago about how games aren't the same when you replay them.
Well, so I didn't play this originally, so I was fine. So there's a recent remake of The Legend of Zelda The Wind Waker that came out for the Wii U. It's called The Legend of Zelda The Wind Waker HD. And it's basically the same game. I mean, they made a few minor tweaks. They made traveling around a bit easier. Because that was a big complaint about the original, is that you spent forever sailing. Made traveling around a bit easier, and obviously they updated all the graphics. And it's just you know, really, really nice. I mean, the game is a great game to begin with, but the job they have done on up-resing it and adding lots of new nice shader effects and that sort of stuff is really great. And I just found myself, like, in a way I don't usually do as of late, I found myself just kind of focusing on that as a game exclusively. Just like, not, you know, usually I kind of jump around and play a bunch of different stuff. And for a couple weeks, I was just into The Wind Waker, and I was, you know, working through it and trying to beat it, and eventually did. And it kind of sucked me in a way that, you know.
It's just a beautiful game.
Yeah, yeah, without a doubt. The music's great. The visuals are great. It's so charming and colorful and pleasant.
I was really just blown away by it, because I didn't think I was going to like it, because I didn't think I would like the cel shading animation style.
Yeah.
But there's something about it. Like, I seriously just could not get enough of it. And like, everybody, I mean, when Liz played it, like, it's probably in her top two.
Yeah.
I think Eternal Darkness and Wind Waker are her favorite games.
Sure. Yeah. It's deep too. That what I love about it is, like, there's so much, there's so much depth to the world. There's so many different little things you can find here and there and interact with, little side things. And, you know, It was just a really satisfying experience that...
the characters are hilarious.
Yes. Tingle's great.
Hi!
Yeah, the little, like... right, yeah. the little bits of, audio blurbs. So, yeah, just very, very enjoyable experience. If you have a Wii U, which you probably don't, and I mean, not you, you know, any of our listeners, I don't even know if any of our listeners have a Wii U, but it's totally worth picking up if you do. And it might be worth picking up a Wii U just for this and a few other games that have come out on that system. Because, yeah, I'm just saying.
Well, once I make the console stop sucking, I'll consider it.
Yep. I pointed a friend of mine to a video of, or actually a live stream of this game being played. And he went out and bought a Wii U like a few days after.
Oh, yeah. So,
you know, just saying.
Well, you and the rest of the rich kids of Instagram will
hang
on
our
trampolines and play the Wii U.
Yep. That's the lifestyle. Speaking of the lifestyle.
Oh, well, swimming pools, movie stars, and Burger King, right?
And Burger King. I'm going to review some items from the Burger King value menu. Okay. So I think these are relatively new items in the Burger King value menu, although I don't actually know the Burger King value menu very well historically. I was acquainted with it.
There's only one thing I know on it, and that's the crispy chicken.
Yeah, the crispy chicken's great.
I agree.
Yeah, it's really great. It might be the best item on the value menu.
Yeah, you know, if you like food that's tasty and delicious,
yeah,
that's where you go.
Yeah, and it's a dollar.
But I've been curious about one of the things on your list here that I've never tried.
So I've two and a half things. So both of these are a dollar because the value menu at Burger King is a dollar a piece, which is amazing. Like
it's actually 99 cents. That's the real value.
Is it really 99 cents?
As far as I know.
I think it's a flat dollar.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
Maybe anyway. In California. Maybe you got to pay like, you know, a chubby tax.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a dollar plus tax. I don't know. Anyway, so the first item is the barbecue rib sandwich. And the second item is the rodeo chicken sandwich or rodeo burger.
Oh.
They do a chicken sandwich and a burger. Both are rodeo style. So the barbecue rib sandwich.
do they serve it on a mechanical bowl?
I'll get to that.
Okay.
So the barbecue rib sandwich is essentially trying to be a McRib, but in a circular patty in a burger format, right? Or like a chicken sandwich style format, you know, and it's not as good. It's no McRib. it's not bad, but it's no McRib. There's less meat. There's the onions are overpowering, and there is not enough sauce. So not enough meat, not enough sauce, too many onions. That's my point there.
I know if I'm going to be eating something called a McRib, I'm going to want a lot of sauce on that.
Yeah, yeah, generally.
to help it go down.
So in your area right now, you may have the McRib. We have not yet gotten the McRib this year out in the West.
Well, they've been hunting the McRib to extinction out here, I think.
Yeah. I think California,
like a white buffalo.
California has stronger protections on McRib farming.
Yeah, a bunch of hippies out there.
Yeah. But in the absence of that, the Burger King barbecue rib sandwich is all we have, and it's a poor substitute, let me tell you.
Sorry, I'm just thinking of like some rancher out in like the middle of
Ray's McRibs
in the Castro.
these are the free range McRibs. We don't, you know.
Probably hunt them in Compton.
Yeah.
in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
That's great.
Okay. So, the barbecue rib sandwich, worth checking out just to see how much worse it is than the McRib, but not, you know, I don't think it's a great, it is a dollar though, so consider that.
That's true. It's not like the lavish lifestyle of the McRib eater.
Right. Yeah, the McRib is like $4.
Yeah, that's a lot of money for what you're actually putting into your body.
You could get four barbecue rib sandwiches for that amount of money.
Or you could root through the garbage behind the McDonald's.
Yeah. Want to find the people who took one bite and then...
Just swallow whatever's there. Yep. Pretty much getting the same experience.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah, just, you're getting it before it gets into the McRib at that point.
You can bring your own like injection mold set. You can just pour the meat product into the shape of a rib.
Yeah,
it's pretty much the same. Delightful.
Okay, and then the Rodeo Chicken Sandwich and Rodeo Burger. These are... This is a chicken sandwich and a burger, which would otherwise be normal, except they have rodeo sauce. And
God,
they,
help me. I don't even want to know. I have to ask. You know what? No, never mind. Never mind.
It's like
don't,
a, it's
don't
like
tell
a,
me.
It's like a it's like a spicy barbecue. It's not.
Can't you leave me some mystery?
And onion rings.
Rodeo sauce.
They have, so rodeo sauce and onion rings.
Fried cheese with spicy club sauce.
The onion rings are not crispy onion rings. They are mushy onion rings.
Oh, nice. That's what you like.
Yeah.
You want those onion rings to be, you know, impossible to bite through. So you have to eat the whole damn thing in one bite.
But I think the rodeo burger, not great because it's all just kind of mushy. The rodeo chicken sandwich, not bad. You got the chicken's kind of crispy. You got that rodeo sauce, which, you know, you can't go wrong.
Okay.
And you got the onion rings, which, you know, they're not like you wouldn't want to eat them standalone, but in a burger, why not?
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. So the soft onion rings are a bit concerning.
Yeah. A little bit. So the impetus behind this is actually that Burger King keeps sending me coupons in the mail, and they totally work. I guess I've used one of them once, but like I'm not a big couponer and I don't actually use these coupons, but they send this little booklet that looks really nice and it makes me think, ooh, Burger King.
Yeah, why not? Yeah.
Anyway, so that's the exciting.
Hey, you know what? That's legit excitement. I think
there's a lot of excitement to be had in very cheap fast food items.
Sometimes.
Yes, because you
and sometimes very exciting trips to the emergency room. or tapeworms.
Here's the great thing. Because each of these items is a dollar, you could walk into a Burger King and basically sample the menu for like $10, right? You probably don't want to do that in one sitting.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. But the idea that you can sample every item on the, you know, on the value menu and, you know, not spend a whole lot of money is a little bit exciting.
If you were going to be executed tomorrow,
yeah,
and for your last meal you could have two things off the Burger King value meal,
yeah,
menu, what would they be?
Oh man.
How about this? Full stop.
Yeah.
Is there a McDonald's value menu?
Oh yeah.
Okay, so you can have one item from the McDonald's menu
and one from the Burger King.
Yes.
Well, the Burger King is clearly the spicy chicken sandwich.
Okay.
Yeah. Without a doubt. That's the best item on that menu. McDonald's value menu, probably...
Now be careful. It's your last meal.
Yeah.
And you've already got the spicy chicken, so you don't want to double up on that.
Yeah, because actually the best item on the McDonald's menu is probably their Buffalo Ranch McChicken.
Yeah, but...
But you wouldn't want to have both, and I do think the Burger King spicy chicken is better than Buffalo Ranch McChicken, so...
You really don't want to have, like, you know, heartburn on your way to a lethal injection.
Yeah. So maybe you'd want to go with the... Well, if you really want to mix things up, you could go for the, like, 5 or 20-piece McNuggets. McNuggets are a solid offering.
Wait a minute. They have a 5 and a 20-piece?
And the 20-piece is about 20 cents or 40 cents more expensive, something like that.
It's not a dollar menu.
It's like, no, it's not. It's not entirely a dollar menu. The McDonald's value. If I had to choose between the dollar items, probably the what's it called? It's like grilled onion cheddar burger. I think it's called.
Oh
yeah, not bad.
That's not bad.
Yeah, you know,
sounds good.
Sure. Yeah,
and I think it would complement the spicy chicken.
Yeah, I think that'd be a good match. If you're looking for $2 worth of last meal food.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Which it could very well be if you have those two items together.
Yeah. It's automatic last meal food. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's definitely possible.
It's yeah,
10 that's... times more likely than if you had not. We'll say that.
Sure. That's probably the way to go. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I'm glad I asked. That's a good question.
Yeah.
This is why I'm a skilled interviewer.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. All right, moving on. Other stuff. So I think I've probably taken some time in a show in the past to talk about how great Ardio is as a music subscription service. Yeah, and I do really appreciate it. But the wall that I hit up against is catalog availability. Not only that, obviously I search for things and they're not in the RDO catalog, but also I've there's a lot of stuff where it'll be there, you'll add it to your collection, and then you'll come back in like a month and it'll be gone. Or it'll
oh,
be
no.
Yeah, it'll be in like, 30-second preview mode because the full thing's not available at that point, because content deals come and go, and there's all sorts of issues that could prevent music from being available in your country at a given time,
Not the least of which being that, the copyright holders are colossal D-bags about it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that definitely contributes.
Like that guy that got thrown out of a movie theater for wearing Google Glass and, the FBI talked to him.
Was that a hoax?
I don't know.
I heard that might be a hoax.
Who knows?
I don't know. It sounds perfectly reasonable to me.
That they would, have a complete anxiety meltdown over it.
Right. So I'm within the past month or so, I've gotten increasingly more frustrated with just, having to split music listening across RDO and another service because there's stuff that's not available on RDO. So then I either have to get it into iTunes or get it into Play Music or, find it on Spotify if it's there. But usually if it's not on RDO, it's not on Spotify. So I'm actually in the process now of giving Play Music All Access a try, which could be the best of all worlds in that I can upload my own music. And then also use their cloud music stuff.
Okay, so that sounds a lot like iTunes.
In iTunes, is there a way to, in iTunes, you can't actually, other than radio, you can't really listen to on demand a track that you don't own, right?
That's true.
Yeah, so that's, I'm looking for that, because that, I tend to, there's a lot of the time there is music that I'm interested in for a span of a few weeks or a month, and then cease to be interested in it. And so I find that for that type of listening, it's really great to be able to, freely stream something for a while and only buy it if I'm really sure that I'm going to want to keep listening to it for the long haul. So I'm toying around with it. There are some gaps, there's some feature gaps that I'm not super happy with. The playlist limit is 1,000 songs, which is I've got a playlist that's bumping right up against that, and that's super frustrating. So,
I have a couple of smart playlists that are just huge.
Yeah, that's the other thing. There aren't any smart playlists smart playlists don't translate into Play Music, and then there is no way to create them once you're in Play Music. And I really I was a power smart playlist user in iTunes back in the day. So,
I still rely on them pretty extensively. I even have various limited ones. So I love having one of my favorite smart playlists is one that will snag everything that was produced in the 4-year span that I was in high school. It's nice. Amazing.
That's great.
It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
And I always have a good time with that. And then I can further, improve that by saying only things that are given 3 or more stars.
Yeah.
And then with the limit playlist, I can get it down to a reasonable number.
Yep.
But
I
really have a fun time with some of those. But
yeah, sure.
Highly recommend the high school trip.
That sounds like it could be pretty scary, but maybe also pretty awesome.
Oh, come on. It's awesome for me. Maybe terrible for you.
I don't know.
And what did you have, Bieber?
I'm not that young. What was high school? High school was that Soulja Boy dance.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that was big when I was in high school.
Oh, good.
Well,
I had Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, and the other thing actually I'm really liking about it, which is this, you kind of have to be bought into the Google ecosystem to be enjoying things in this way. But the integration with Chromecast is fantastic. So I'm at the point where I will leave my receiver with Chromecast connected on most of the time in my living room, and then at any point I can pull out my phone or iPad, open up Play Music, and start something playing, and then switch it to the Chromecast and it plays on my stereo. So
I heard that they have a there's a Plex port for the Chromecast now.
I don't know that
would probably get me to buy one. I just don't know how well it performs.
Like getting or uh a
I,
a way to get Plex Media to stream Chromecast?
No, no, no. That's pretty true.
Or actually running Plex on the Chromecast
itself? I think there's a Plex client that runs on it, but I'm not sure about that.
Wow.
Because I love Plex, but the one thing that I don't like is that I have to use my somewhat decrepit Apple TV to run it if I want to run it natively in the living room, or I have to use AirPlay, which I don't like doing because then I can't do anything else with that device, really. I mean, I can like have my phone or my iPad playing something, but then I can't use that device while it's doing that. Yeah. So that's kind of a drag, but I thought about grabbing like a Roku or something or some other device that has a Plex client just for that, but then someone was like, you know, I think the Chromecast has one, and they do say that they do, but I don't know how it works or what the requirements are for it.
Yeah, if it works well, I mean, it's probably the smallest device you can get to do that. If
well, I don't care about the size. What I care about is that it's inexpensive and that it is
that
dedicated.
As well. Yeah,
I'd like it to be dedicated.
Sure.
That link I just posted to you on the Google machine is amazing. It is a video of the children's television show Barney the Dinosaur with the Crank That Soulja Boy song. It's like a video mashup, and it's outstanding.
Excellent. You want to drop that in the show notes, too?
You know what? Yes.
Yeah. You can put it right under the RDO to play music.
I think I will. Yeah, right there.
Yeah. I think that explains it right there. So, and then my last thing, over the holidays.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, boy.
I dabbled in a bit of Etsy shopping.
Yeah, you did.
So I think Etsy.
What'd you get me?
Not for you.
I saw all my Steam receipts rolling in last week.
Yeah, you should have some. I dropped some games on you, but no Etsy stuff. Sorry. If you're not familiar, I think Etsy is pretty well known. But if you're not familiar, Etsy is this is kind of a marketplace for people who make craft goods.
Yeah, it's like eBay, but it doesn't suck.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, not like people's used crap. It's stuff that they made that's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And usually it's handmade stuff. A lot of the times it's custom stuff. You know, like so a couple examples. So
well, my menorah. We talked about the menorah that I got.
Oh, was that from Etsy?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Totally. So yeah, I used it a bit over the holidays in for one gift. I got a custom journal for my grandmother, which was I just the, I mean the other great thing about Etsy is like you tend to be buying from a real person. So like in this case, this is a person in Spain, and I was able to communicate like I'm giving this as a gift to my grandmother. Can you
gift for grandmother?
Yeah, but like I you know and yeah. They spoke English just fine.
I'm sure they probably spoke it better than some Americans would.
Yeah. I was able to work out basically that I could give a gift card to my grandmother and then have her over email with the person who was making the journal say, you know, like what custom elements she wanted on it, because you could pick like a quote to have on the cover and that sort of stuff.
Why didn't you do this? I thought it was a gift.
Well, because I mean, I didn't want to. I wanted her to be able to pick her own quote, you know? Like, she's going to have a journal. She should be able
to.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, that's still good.
She picked a better quote than I would have picked, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, yours would have been like, Crank That Soulja Boy, right?
Yeah.
Like,
the ultimate poetry, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. I think, what was the quote? Do you mind if I ask?
It was a mind that something about like a mind that expands to hold a new idea never returns to its original dimensions or something like that.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was awesome. And like they did it so it was half of that was on the cover, and then you turned to the first page and it was the rest of the quote. So yeah, it looked really nice. Anyway, so that's that. Yeah, that was a really great experience. I also ordered a candle that smells like the Shire.
Oh God, what does it matter with you?
And it kind of does, you know. I mean, I've never been to the Shire, but I'd imagine
nobody's been to the Shire.
Yeah. Hey, Bilbo's been to the Shire.
You're killing me. Have you seen that movie?
Peter Jackson's been to the Shire.
Oh,
and back.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah, I know. I haven't seen the new ones, either of them.
Wait, there's more than one? They're both like...
Yeah, there's a new
like
one.
Three, like, so there's 6 hours of this crap you got to sit through now?
Is the new one out yet? The new one might not be out yet. No, I think the new one did come out. The Desolation of Smaug.
Ugh.
I don't know. Anyway, you can watch it at 60 frames per second.
Great.
Or whatever the high frame rate thing is.
You know what's really weird about that is that the movies themselves, like film, do you remember the changeover from like standard definition to HD and like how news broadcasts had to be completely changed, like how they do makeup and lighting and set design and all of that?
I was 2 years old at the time.
Oh, yeah, right. So there was a very awkward moment in television.
Yeah. I mean, I remember with basketball games was, I think, yeah. My, like, that was, I have memories of, like, basketball game coverage in which they were highlighting footage that wasn't yet in, HD switchover, yeah. Or whatever. Yeah, yeah.
But they had, like, this stuff where they were first using HD cameras for the first time, and, like, news anchors just looked like they were wearing like, pancake batter on their faces because they had all this, like, crap makeup on, and now they have to do, like, a really good job instead of just slather people up.
Right, yeah.
So there's been, like, some big changes, but someone was, I think it was it one of the Lord of the Rings movies or something? I can't remember what it was. But they did, like, some crazy, like, wide-angle HD high frame rate video thing, and people, and they said people said it made them dizzy. Mm-hmm. And it was like, because the 24 frames, I mean, like, the reason that that's like a natural frame rate is because that's what, you know, your eyes are comfortable with,
right? Yeah.
And then when you're doing things in a higher frame rate, you don't get the same visual effect. Like, instead of seeing like the motion blur, like the way that things are filmed expects there to be like this normal 24 frame roll, and right. Like, when you have something that's capturing more stuff, you're getting more information, and it was making some people like really uncomfortable while they were trying to watch this movie. It was very distracting. And like, people, I think there was one person, like one review I was reading, that said they really liked the movie as a regular film, and then like when they watched it in IMAX at 60 frames or whatever, they thought it was just way too stimulating. Like, sure. they couldn't focus on any, they couldn't watch the movie because they were too drawn in to the individual parts of the scenes. Which is really interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, like, artistically, it's a weird thing, because I mean, you're gonna have to, people would have to make films in a very different way.
Yeah.
And I don't know that that's something people want to do.
I have a similar thing with 3D of like, if I'm watching a 3D movie, I'm focused more on how distracting the 3D is than actually watching the film, you know?
Well, that and the fact, you know, they feel like a total rube for watching a movie in 3D.
Right, yeah, there's that too.
Yeah, I think, like, I don't know what it is, but like, there's, I mean, the HD move for television was definitely a big deal, and then like the 4K thing is going to bring that up again. But I don't know, like the higher frame and film and stuff, it's just so weird to me. Like, I don't know how that's going to work out.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, so like 60 frames per second makes a ton of sense in games, because you want,
yes, you
want the lag from input to something being displayed on the screen to be as low as possible.
Yeah.
And at 60 frames per second, that lag becomes imperceptible and insignificant. It becomes like less than 20 milliseconds. But for film, like, because it's not interactive, it, you know, as long as you're seeing a smooth picture, it doesn't really matter.
Well, maybe, you know what? That's a good point. You said a very key thing there, and I wonder if like this is going to be kind of what facilitates a jump to an interactive type of entertainment with movies.
You mean,
no, I'm dead serious. Like, I think one of the things that's so jarring about it is that when you are manipulating something in real time, if it's less than 30 frames per second, it's a little jarring,
sure,
to interact with something, even the 24, which you're normally used to watching passively.
Yep.
But if you're like trying to like, you know, do stuff, it's, I think people want 30 to 60.
So you're saying if a movie was 60 frames per second, then it could be more.
Well, I think
at that point, then
I'm not saying that would make it.
That is a video game, right?
Exactly what I'm saying. Is like, if the visual side of things is at that level of resolution and display, then that would facilitate there being some sort of different type of movie, like that's different as a medium.
Yeah.
Did you read that article about YouTube being vaudeville?
Being vaudeville, no.
Oh, you would love it. You would love this. Let me see if I can dig that up while you're going.
All right. In the meantime, the last item that I got from Etsy was fudge.
Oh, come on.
It was good. It was, I mean, it, like, they let you pick a selection of flavors from a massive list, and they sent you a box with all those flavors in it. Yeah, had some eggnog fudge. That was pretty good.
Eggnog fudge.
Eggnog fudge, yeah. Rocky Road
fudge. Chocolate eggnog here. One of the local dairies makes this chocolate eggnog.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, I'm not an eggnog guy, but Liz is all about the eggnog.
Yeah. So, yeah, had some fun with Etsy. It was good.
You got your
link?
Yeah. It's called YouTube is Vaudeville 2.0. And it's a fascinating article, because what the author does, I don't know if it's a he or a she, it's Jim Stewartson, so I'm gonna assume man, but he compares the motion picture industry to the internet, and basically, like, from like the Zupraxiscope from the late 1800s, which is at the same proof of concept time as ARPANET, right? And then you have, like, this consumer technology being the kinetoscope in 1891,
yep,
and 1990 for HTML and HTTP. Then you had, like, the first consumer product, which was, like, you know, Netscape Navigator or Mosaic, and then the Cinemagraph. And those line up also, like, 4 years, 5 years later. So there's, like, this parallel track that mm-hmm. runs from the motion pictures industry to the internet. And so leading up to standalone content that's produced and sold commercially using these formats. So, like, in 2012, they have the example in 1911 is, like, some of the first features that were released on film, like Dante's Inferno. And then things like second screen applications, which are, like, things that accompany movies, and then the vaudeville photo plays in the 1910. And it's really interesting. So what happens next, though, is that in this parallel track that has existed up to this point, we don't know what happens in the present day, but we know that in 1914 to 1920, that's when the five major studios were founded.
Huh.
So it's entirely what seems likely is that there will be a handful of new media powerhouses that are built right now.
Right. Yeah.
And you know, I'm thinking Amazon, I'm thinking Netflix, I'm thinking Hulu. And the only reason I'm thinking that is just because they have the distribution under control, which is how they were kind of working with, like, the film industry originally. And
they have that, and they're creating original content, which makes them look very similar. Yeah.
Yes. Yep. And they already have this huge distribution channel in place that they don't have to pay anything extra for.
Yeah.
So it's like basically they own all the theaters.
Yeah.
And it doesn't cost them anything to ship the movie. So it's a really interesting concept, and I think what they're talking about really in this article is that YouTube is, like, a really key and crucial part of this, because it's such a accessible technology for people that don't know anything really about making movies. They can still make clips and short films and photo plays and put them up. And, well, why are you laughing? I mean, this is, like,
I know.
Familiar with YouTube, and maybe you already knew all this, but, like, I never saw it this way. You know, like, for me, YouTube was like, you know, laughing cats eating sour cream, and and what does the fox say?
Yeah, right.
There's this whole other side of it that I am completely oblivious to.
Yep.
That just blows my mind. And yep. I think, I mean, now that YouTube and Google are looking at acquiring and distributing content from other, like, there's so many things that are happening with this, and it's really just fascinating to me. And I know that I totally just threw this in at the last minute, but it's definitely a great article to read, and it's in the show notes now.
Cool. Yeah. There is a lot of quality content on YouTube that, you know, is sometimes hard to discover, but it exists.
It is. It's like you're panning for gold.
Yep.
Somewhere out in the great wild west, and you're digging through an awful lot of garbage before you get there, but eventually you will find your McRib.
Yeah, sure. All right. So as I have mentioned to you, before the show, I bought a Surface Pro 2 over the holidays.
That's like the Microsoft iPad, right?
That's like the Microsoft iPad laptop, whatever.
Uh-huh.
The one device for everything in your life is what they say.
Really? How's that keyboard?
Not bad.
Shut up.
Okay, well, here's the deal. So I bought this
you're so full of crap.
I bought this on a Saturday, and I returned it.
Oh no!
On a Thursday, I think. So I think I had it for less than a week, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah, but I did. I tried it out. I honestly, like, I thought I would enjoy owning this thing. I really wanted to like it.
Because of Xbox, right?
Not just that. I mean, just you know, it is a really well engineered device. It's okay. Like, you know, the screen is gorgeous. The you know, it is as light and as small as it possibly could be, given what's in there. Like the fact that they've got, you know, they're running full Windows, and they've got, you know.
You did not have like the RT version.
No, this is the Pro. Yeah, okay. So it's running full Windows. It's got a, you know, an Intel, not an Atom. It's got like a proper Intel processor in there.
Yep.
And
my dad, like, he's wanting one of these, I think.
Yeah. An Intel i5. It's got 8 gigs of RAM. Like, it's, you know, it's a capable machine. But I did not find it to be a very good tablet. And I did not find it to be a very good laptop. Like, or it was, let me put it this way. It was a worse tablet than my iPad mini, and it was a worse laptop than my MacBook Air. The fact that it approached both of those things in one device doesn't make up for the fact that it wasn't good. It wasn't anywhere near as good at being either.
It invites its own criticism. No, it does. I mean, like, it is positioned specifically as, you know, like, why compromise? Why get a tablet or a computer when you can have both?
Right.
And like, they're setting themselves up on that, where it's like people expect both and they can't have it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, the stuff you don't realize, like, despite all the stuff they've done with Windows 8, having real Windows on a tablet in a tablet form factor just doesn't work that well. You know, like, you just end up in. You end up in applications that aren't optimized for touch at all.
And terrible, terrible app store.
And yeah, right. And like, I didn't even spend any time.
How could you?
Right. Yeah. You know, in the app store. So, it's not, I mean, and little things like, this is something I never would have realized before actually trying this device out. So because this is like a real laptop device, a real Windows device. When you go to a website that plays video, you get Flash video, right? Because it has Flash, right?
Of course it does. Why not?
If you visit that same website on your iPad, you get HTML5 video, because what else are they going to do? They need to support the iPad, so they need to provide HTML5.
Why wouldn't they just do HTML5?
Right, but they don't. They don't. I mean, there's tons of websites where
that's so dumb.
Right, yeah, where you visit it on a Surface and you get the Flash version, you visit on your iPad, you get the HTML5 version. It's just, you know, like something like that. It's just, you know, you appreciate how many little things the iPad improved about pieces of the computing experience in a tablet form factor that, you know, aren't improved in the same way if you just take an existing PC and shove it into a tablet form factor.
Huh.
So, yeah. You know, like, power consumption is another thing, right? Like, you know, the iPad, it's got an ARM processor in there, very power efficient. The system is designed around not consuming a lot of power, you know. And then this service, like, it has a beefy battery in there. And it, you know, with conservative settings, it's getting like 6 hours, which is not bad, you know, but the iPad's getting 10 or 12
days.
Yeah. And the other thing is, like, you're sort of constantly managing the power settings of the Surface, because, you know, Windows has different power settings, and like, there is a setting where it limits the amount, the degree to which the processor can, you know, basically underclocks the processor to save power. So you want that when you're in tablet mode, but you don't want that when you're in, you know, laptop mode. So you just end up like switching that back and forth constantly. I found myself doing so.
Ugh.
Yeah. So, you know, stuff like that. It is a compromise in a lot of ways, and just not something I saw replacing either device. With that said, the hardware is beautiful. It's like, it's a nicely designed device.
The industrial design looks good.
Yeah.
I like the way that they feel, like, when you pick them up, because I've handled them before.
Yep.
But I just I was really skeptical of the flex keyboard thing. And
The touch keyboard I'm pretty skeptical of. I got the type keyboard, which has actual keys in it.
Oh, okay.
And the type cover, which actually tended to work pretty well. But even with that, like, so then you've got this thing that when it's attached, it makes it pretty bulky, or, you know, not pretty, but it makes it somewhat bulky. So you really don't want to have it attached when you're using it as a tablet. But then if you ever want to type on it, you really want that thing. So now you have to carry, like, this keyboard case around with it. Like,
yeah, see, this is what I don't get, because, like, a guy in my office has one of those Lenovo convertible tablets.
Yeah.
And it's, like, about the same size as the Surface. And yeah, it's as good or better made. And when you want to carry it around and use it like a tablet, you can. And then when you, like, drop it in its little cradle thing, and yeah, that's when you have a keyboard and everything else.
Yeah.
And I think I like that approach better.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that's similar. I mean, you know, this case, like, you could use this case as just a dock and, like, leave it somewhere and, you know, use it there. But I found myself kind of, like, carrying it around with me. Yeah, I don't know. So, yeah, it was not ideal. And it's really too bad. Like, I felt really bad when I was returning it. And, you know, I had a conversation with the guy in the Microsoft store who was asking, you know, what don't you like? You know, like, what's wrong? And I'm like, well, kind
everything.
Of, yeah, like, kind of a lot of things. And it's not really, you know, it did all it could. Like, I don't fault the device or Microsoft.
It was doing
or
its
whatever.
Best.
Yeah, like, you know, it reached the limit of what is possible in combining those two device, you know, the two types of device. It's just that combination is not an appealing notion, you know?
Well, it's kind of like when, like, the first handspring devices were coming out before the Palm Trio and all that. Like, they had these really, like, awkward, goofy mobile phone radios that you clamped onto, like, your handspring Palm device, so you could have, like, a Palm OS gizmo that could also make phone calls, and it was just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, oh, wow, it's great. I only have to carry one device. And it just so happens it's, like, the most awkwardly shaped and terribly designed device you could possibly put in your pocket. So
great. Yeah.
It was a little weird in that case. But in this case, they got the design right, but not necessarily the capabilities, which is kind of disconcerting. But I'm glad that they're doing it, because I think it's really important. And I think it's something that they will get right eventually. But I think that they, you know, people that were a little critical of, say, the Newton could probably use this opportunity to really think about what they've said.
Yeah. So yeah, that was my experience with the Surface. You know, it, like, yeah, it, I was really impressed with it, but it did not meet my needs. So
yeah. Yep. Plus, I mean, the MacBook Air, I think I'd rather carry the Air.
Yeah. The Air is, I mean, the Air is about the same weight as the Surface. And
especially if you add, like, the 11.
Yeah. Oh, if you have the 11, it's probably lighter. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So, yeah. And, and the iPad mini is way, way, way lighter and way more, you know, space efficient. So, yep.
Anyway. I think, my little thing I've been tinkering with lately is this, somewhat related in that one of the things that I like to do on the iPad is, like, manage some media stuff and do some web stuff when I can, which mostly is, like, just writing stuff. But I've been playing with, you know, all these, like, photo hosting services, and there's, like, a million of them now, and we should still do that roundup at some point, because there's a ton of them. There's, like, you know, Flickr, obviously. There's Google Plus thing.
Photos, hey, SmugMug, so PhotoBucket.
How come Google Plus Photos does not do an auto awesome on a group of photos that I put up that it should be doing auto awesome on?
You mean they're all, like, very similar photos with slight
differences? Yes.
Huh.
And it didn't do it.
How many are there? I think the minimum is 5.
Oh, because I have, like, 4, I think, but I can put a fifth one in there.
Yeah, I'd try that. I think it's 5. I don't remember exactly, but yeah. So.
Okay, I'll give that a whirl. Yeah. I think, let me think. I've been playing with, there was a like Open Photo is one that I thought was pretty cool, but then they kind of, like, botched how they were going about doing that. And then there's I don't know. There's literally like a dozen of them. And then someone on app.net, it was BSEC, but she's a girl. She said that she was checking out this thing called Koken, or I don't know how you say it, but it's K-O-K-E-N. Mm-hmm. I say Koken. Maybe it's Koken. Rockin' with Dokken. Yeah. And it's basically like a little gallery CMS that lets you do like photo essays and also like albums and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's really kind of cool. And I'm not sure if I'm going to like stick with it or anything, but I'll tell you what I like about it so far. And that is that right now it doesn't cost anything because it's free. And it's just like a little PHP thingy. So if you can do a WordPress install, you can do this. And it lets you do some pretty nice layout stuff, and it's pretty clever. But my favorite thing about it, I think, is that it has like a little publishing widget that you can use in Adobe Lightroom. So if you have like an album in Lightroom, you can drag it into your instance of Koken and hit publish, and it puts your stuff up there just like it would a Flickr or anything else.
That's awesome.
Huh. It's kind of cool, and it's a lot of fun to play with. And there's like, I don't know, six or seven like themes for sites and stuff, and it's been really interesting though, and I kind of like it. I just haven't figured out quite yet if I want to continue using it, but I set up a test instance of it on one of my unused domain names that has a it's just too good not to use. It's ye old.
Yep.
But it's yeol.de. So yep. If you go to ye old, which is ye old light and shadows, which is right now it's just like a bunch of photos that I've had recently, but I don't know, like it's pretty cool software, and my only concern about it is that like a lot of things, if people, I get asked from time to time, like I want to put some photographs online, like how do I do that? And usually if they're like a photographer or an artist, I'll direct them towards Squarespace. Uh-huh. Just because that's kind of their bread and butter, and it's what they do, and then they manage all of it for you, which is nice.
It's a very out of the box solution.
And you get a really good looking professional look, and it's easy to get the feel for it and use, and you don't have to like maintain it or because as much as WordPress is fine for a lot of stuff, but it's not something that I would want someone to be having to maintain. This is in the same boat, though, where you are ultimately on the hook for making sure that the software is running smoothly and blah, blah, blah. And it's kind of a pre-release state right now, so it's not really fully baked. But what's there works. It's just not as feature-rich as it could be, but that's okay. And if you're kind of into that sort of thing, I've been talking to some people on the AppNet machine, and they've been tinkering with it too, and it's pretty cool, and I really like it. I think I really like the idea of something like using Google Plus Photos or Flickr or whatever, because it's a service. But at the same time, I also kind of like the fact that my stuff can be something that I have better visibility into, and
more customization control over. And
yeah, but on the other hand, that's a double-edged sword. It's great to be able to customize it, but at the same time, then I'm customizing.
Yeah.
So that's what, I was thinking really seriously about Squarespace, and I still might go that route, but this is definitely a good diversion until I figure that out.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, yeah, the Lightroom thing, though. There was a story recently that said that Lightroom for iOS is coming, but that they think it's going to be $100 a year, which I thought was kind of weird.
Yeah, for iOS especially, that's a pretty high price point. I'm saying for mobile in general, that's a pretty high price point for an app.
That's kind of dumb. I don't agree with that, though. I realize that I think I get so mad about this because...
I'm not saying bad thing. I'm just saying that the market has trouble bearing things that are that expensive.
Well, yeah, because some of the consumers just don't care, and they just demand things cost a dollar.
Right. Yes.
Or nothing, and it's stupid. And that's why they get all these terrible applications and they complain about it. Then there's people like the Omni Group that are able to sell $40 and $50 apps for iOS and do quite well.
Right. Yeah. Well, are there iOS apps 40? I thought they were 20.
I'm pretty sure that Omni Outliner for iOS is $50.
Wow. But
I know OmniFocus was $30-$40 pop.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I had to buy that on three different platforms.
Hmm. So when you told me this, what I had assumed was that if you owned Lightroom as part of the Adobe Creative Cloud program, you would get it for free on the iPad as part of that subscription. I just assumed that would be the case, but so it'd be...
That's, it's entirely possible, but the article that I was reading said that basically it showed up on the as an available product, and then they're able to like go through the purchasing process, which doesn't make a lot of sense because how would you buy it on the Adobe store? But
well, I mean, you could buy access to Lightroom for iPad, and then you'd have to log in on the, you know, the app itself or whatever.
I have no idea, but the that's a good point because it could be like a subscription service for like, because that's the thing is that I didn't know how, because like, you know, the photos I'm taking right now are like over 30 megs a pop, and I don't know how that would work with something like Lightroom, because then I'm what, like gonna cram like 90 gigs of photos onto my 16 gig iPad? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So there has to be something going on, and I think you're onto something there with that, because what's probably going to happen is that there will be a like a minor point release of Lightroom that has like some Adobe Creative Cloud storage thing, and then people get their libraries and catalog. Oh, you know what I bet it is? I bet it's like the smart preview stuff in their catalogs in Lightroom 5. It's probably going to use that information and then send you, essentially let you synchronize like JPEG previews, and when you do modifications on the iPad, it will synchronize those back as a remote collection.
Yeah,
I'm almost positive that's how they're going to have to do it.
That'd be great.
I agree.
Yeah.
And I still don't think Lightroom's as good as Aperture for a lot of things, but there's a few things that Lightroom does that Aperture just doesn't do a great job with. So
yeah,
I'm not happy. I'm never happy.
You don't say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for the show, Alan.
Yeah, that'll probably do it for this episode of Hell Yeah Show. If you want to contact us, you can write us at show@hellyeah.com. You can visit us online at show.hellyeah.com, where you can find all the show notes.
And you can also visit us on the Twitter machine, twitter.com/hellyeahshow. Send us a tweet at Hell Yeah Show, and also at Hell Yeah on app.net and Hell Yeah Show on Google Plus.
All right. And with that, we will see you in about 2 weeks.
See ya. Wait, is it 2013?
Nope, it's 20. Thank you for catching that. Okay, we got to re-record the first one then.